This podcast of The Business is a production of KCRW Santa Monica at 89.9 FM and webcasting at kcrw.com.
Hello, I'm Variety's Claude Brodesser, and this is The Business.
So you still want to do the show business, and you think that you got what it takes? I mean, you really got to rap and be all that, but prepare yourself for the breaks. Check it out.
On today's show, we check in with Louisiana's film commissioner about the wrath of Katrina. Then we'll speak with America's least known and best read film critic. And in our cover story, the most powerful people in Hollywood may actually now live in Bentonville, Arkansas. We check in on how Walmart and other big box stores are changing show business for better and for worse. But first, it's the Hollywood News Caravan. Stay tuned. It's The Business. The grill is gone, the summer is over, but the Hollywood News Caravan is just getting started. After being inundated with horrific images of Katrina, you'd be forgiven if seeing things in higher definition was the last thing on your mind. In which case, bad news for Toshiba last week may come as welcome news for you. In emails to its movie studio partners, Toshiba announced it was, quote, retiming the release of its planned HD DVD format. That's corporate speak for blew the deadline, which was to have been this Christmas, when big box retailers were hoping to start selling high-definition DVD players. Toshiba said the reasoning behind delaying HD DVD was to launch the new format with a splashy cannonball! And here I was clearly departing from the officially translated Japanese text. Over at Sony, which is backing its own high-def DVD format, called Blu-ray, the news was likely received with a huge sigh of relief. That's because Sony's players won't be introduced into the States until at least mid-2006. Whichever format prevails, one thing has become abundantly clear. Even on high-def DVD, this summer's movies will still look like the foaming dog drool they were. This summer's box office take? The worst outing since 2001 at $3.86 billion, and down 9% from last year. Meanwhile, the regular non-high-definition future of DVD rental giant Blockbuster looks as cloudy as ever. Remember the end of late fees? Well, eliminating late fees has thrown Blockbuster, the nation's largest movie rental chain, into such a cash crunch that Hollywood movie studios have had to take extraordinary steps to make sure they'll be paid for their product. One studio has demanded Blockbuster pay in cash to get its fall releases, while two other studios have taken out third-party insurance just in case Blockbuster drags its feet in paying. 2 weeks ago, Blockbuster told its shareholders that it wouldn't be paying its usual cash dividend for the third quarter in an effort to make sure the fourth quarter wouldn't look as bad as the second and third. The irony in all this is that Blockbuster dropped its late fees to better compete with Netflix, the online DVD powerhouse. How's Netflix doing? Well, the maniacal cackling you hear in the background is Netflix CEO Reed Hastings laughing all the way to the bank. Netflix announced last week that its forecasted earnings per share would rise by 50% annually for the next several years. Netflix's stock ended the week up 7%. About the only good news for Louisiana last week came from Sacramento, where it became clear that Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger's dream of a fat tax break to keep production in California, i.e., not Louisiana, was going to stay just that, a dream, at least until next year. Facing down dirty looks from taxpayer groups and the expiration of the state legislature's session, the bill ironically labeled 777 is being mothballed. The time on the shelf will allow the Speaker of the California Assembly, Fabian Nunez, and Governor Schwarzenegger time to figure out how to sell the plan, which taxpayer groups have likened to holding a benefit concert for Jerry Bruckheimer. Finally, in a rare case of synergy, Sony is releasing its movie Stealth for its PlayStation portable game console with a video game already on the DVD. This is a cunning plan. Even though most people expressed a preference for being burned alive over watching Stealth again, there is a logic here. The carpal tunnel syndrome kids get from playing Stealth the game will prevent them from successfully pressing eject on Stealth the movie. Like I said, cunning. And that's the Hollywood News Caravan. Coming up next on The Business, filming in Louisiana may not be the big easy, but it's not out of the question either. Since July of 2002, production tax incentives in Louisiana brought 40 productions and hundreds of millions of dollars into the state. Hurricane Katrina, amongst her other destruction, will put a mighty damper on this southern success story. But the people in the Pelican State want Hollywood to know that they ain't given up just yet. Alex J. Schott is a native of New Orleans and the director of the Louisiana Governor's Office of Film and Television Development. Well, first of all, thanks for speaking with us.
Oh, yeah, anytime.
I guess, you know, where to begin. First of all, glad you're safe, and where are you working now?
Actually, we have relocated to the Baton Rouge area, which is where our offices used to be. We used to be housed, we're housed within the Department of Economic Development, which is based out of Baton Rouge, right next to the Capitol. So we used to be housed there until 2003, when we moved down to the Harahan area, which is in the, I guess you can call it the greater New Orleans area. It's just outside of Orleans Parish. And we went there for logistic reasons because of all the activity that was occurring in that area. So,
now, the movie business has been big business for Louisiana, at least for the last year or two, with the tax incentives you guys have had there for some time.
Right, right. I mean, you can't overlook the impact that it has had. I mean, it's really probably one of the fastest growing industries, if not the fastest growing industry in the state. And, you know, now, obviously, most of the production was centralized in the southeastern part of the state. And with this, this huge disaster, the devastation that we're seeing, we want to be able to keep the Louisiana economy going, because I think, you know, you don't want to have a disaster where people are out of work, you're getting displaced businesses. Any industry you can keep in the state at this point is going to be a huge positive and a plus, and people want to work. So what we're doing now is we're seeing a great outpouring of support from North Louisiana, Central Louisiana. Every sector of the state is really getting behind and offering to lend their support to do whatever they can to help the state in the long run, keep as many businesses and as many people working while we're trying to get through this most difficult time.
Now, there are 54 other parishes besides New Orleans. Can other parts of the state handle a film crew at the same time that they're absorbing evacuees?
I think it's certainly a delicate balance and a challenge, but I think, you know, when presented with a challenge, I think the people in the different parts of the state have been more than ready to step up. And I think, you know, right now it's especially difficult because of the mass, the amount of people in each individual area. As time goes on, you start to see that thin out and dissipate, and it'll become easier, you know, hotel-wise and logistics-wise, for them to handle a lot of these productions that look to be relocating to the northern cities and the more western cities.
Now, there was about $700 million or so in TV and film production that had been coming to the state in the last few years. About 80% of that, I'm told, went to New Orleans. Is that more or less correct?
That would be correct. That would be right, because of the because of the makeup and the infrastructure, what industry we did have prior to the incentive program, prior to the success that we have had over the past couple of years, it was based and centralized in that, you know, let's say 50-mile radius of New Orleans in the southeastern part of the state. So obviously it was going to grow from that, grow out of that. And we started to see more productions over time, looking at, you know, Baton Rouge, for example, looking at Lafayette, looking at Morgan City, looking at spreading out. And Shreveport has always been of interest to many of the productions because of its specific look. And we've had a tremendous amount of support from the folks, from the constituents and the people and the leaders in places like Alexandria and Monroe.
What are you doing to reach out to Hollywood? Are you meeting with or coming to Hollywood to meet with studio heads or network heads to convey the message that you're open for business? Is that the message, first of all, you want to send?
Well, the Secretary of Economic Development has definitely sent out the philosophy that we need to convey that message that Louisiana is open for business. We don't want, we're a strong state and we have to remain open. We have to keep this economy going while we're trying to get through this. And what we're trying to do right now is I've met with producers this past week that had productions that were impacted by the storm. Of course, our first concern is safety, and then we talked about relocation options and alternatives. So, you know, it's been very positive in terms of the support that they've given, not only at the most human level, but also from a business standpoint. They want to make sure that Louisiana doesn't suffer from losing any more business than what has been devastated by the storm. So the first thing was to decide what's going to be done about the current slate of productions, and the majority of which are being relocated are in the process of being relocated to different parts of the state.
In terms of what, first of all, do you know how many films and shows were shooting in New Orleans when the hurricane came? And are they all okay? Or
yeah, at my count, they all evacuated quite early. I mean, well over a day early, because they knew that, you know, they heeded the warnings. They were immediately evacuated. Shooting-wise, there was about three movies that were actually shooting, unless I'm leaving one out, but I'm pretty sure that three were actually shooting, and one of them was in Baton Rouge, so they weren't, you know, they're actually in the process of getting back up rolling, because Baton Rouge wasn't directly affected by the storm. They were indirectly affected by the evacuations, but the other two have relocated. They were towards the end of their shoots, and they've relocated to finish up their productions.
Mm-hmm. What is the message you most want to send to Hollywood's agents, its managers, its producers, its studio heads right now?
Similar to what our business, you know, leaders have been saying here is that, you know, the rebuilding process is going to be a long one, and we need to remain focused, and we need to overcome the tragedies. So, and through that, we need to strengthen the economy through having people work. We need people to work. We need to keep the jobs here. We need to keep the businesses here as best we can.
Mr. Schott, please stay safe, and thanks for being on The Business, and please come back anytime and update us on what Hollywood can do and what's going on.
Thank you. I sure will. I appreciate it.
Coming up next on The Business, the world's most read film critic. Pauline Kael might be the most well-respected film critic of all time, and Roger Ebert perhaps the most famous. But it's likely that more people have read Mick Martin's reviews than anyone else in the history of film. Mick was the film reviewer for the now-defunct Sacramento Union newspaper when home video just made the scene, and he decided people needed help muddling through the schlock that was making its way into video stores. 20 years later, Mick Martin and Marcia Porter's DVD and Video Guide 2006 is the best-selling video guide on the market. Matt Holzman spoke with Mick Martin from Capital Public Radio in Sacramento.
Mick Martin, welcome to The Business.
It's wonderful to be with you.
I'm holding your tome. It's a very large book with thousands and thousands of movie entries in it. Tell me first how you started into this business. What was the genesis of this book?
At the time, there was no guide to video, and there were an awful lot of bad videos out there. I'm not sure you realize it, but originally the thing that sold most VCRs and, you know, got people interested in movies was that it was the first time people could watch adult films in their home. But a lot of the adult film companies had to justify the fact that they were putting out these movies, so they put out a lot of very, very bad imports. As a result, there was a lot of terrible stuff out on video. I got a call from a fellow named Captain Carrot, who in Sacramento has a line of health food products, and he said, "Mick, you gotta write a book. You gotta help me here." I was writing for the Sacramento Union Daily newspaper at the time, and it really was the first time anybody had put out a book with video on it. We put it together ourselves and established what we thought was kind of our own rating. You know, having a 5-star movie instead of a 4, and instead of having 1 star for poor, we used Turkey. And it just so happened that Tower Video Manhattan was opening just before Tower agreed to handle it on a consignment basis. Well, Ballantine, Ace, a number of publishers saw it, and we had a little bidding war. And in three months, we had to come up with we had 800 movies to start with, and they wanted 2,500 in the first book. And, of course, now it's close to 23,000, despite the fact this is 19,000 on the front. We've been told that it's more than that.
So when you're talking about we, you're talking about you and your co-author, Marcia Porter. But this is the 20th anniversary of the book. So when you started this book, you know, really video had just begun.
There was a lot of confusion about what was good and what wasn't good, and there was an awful lot of material. I mean, you had the mom-and-pop video shops, so they didn't know. A lot of these people didn't come from a film background. They came from a background of, gee, this would be a good business to get into, so let's rent movies to people. We were the first book ever to come out and have the word video on it.
That first edition of the book that you put out yourself What exactly did you do? Did you just go out, rent a lot of films, watch them, write little reviews, and you know, kind of put it together? Or how, what, you know, how, what was the process?
Well, there were 800 movies, and they were all mine, 800 movie reviews. I had been watching and writing about films since 71, and so we just used everything I'd ever written and had to establish a format which included, you know, cast and director, not quite as in-depth as it now appears in the DVD and Video Guide 2006, but it was sort of the beginning of the formula of how we would... The best thing that ever happened to this book was an editor named Marilyn Abraham who said, you've got to have an index for cast and director. And it's sort of like the way to be the instant movie expert. I take it with me when I do interviews on the radio because somebody will say, oh, yeah, that movie with De Niro and Pacino, what was the name of that? And if I have, you know, one of those senior moments, I can, you know, sort of fill and say, oh, yeah, Michael Mann, yeah, Heat. That's, you know, so you just... You use it in a way that, you know, even film critics find it helpful to have with them because there are a lot of times when your mind just goes blank because there's so much coming at us all the time.
Right. Now, but let's go back again. You know, you had written many film reviews, so you already had them. So it was a matter of kind of repurposing for this book. Now you have something more than 20,000, you said. How did you do that?
Great pain. I mean, literally, I called everybody I knew who had ever been a movie buff, and I was then on what's known as the junket trail, which meant that I was in touch with a lot of my peers, you know, and who were movie critics at the time back in 1985. And I said, well, look, you know, if you can help, I'd really appreciate it because there are a lot of areas that I, you know, like John Tibbetts, who had American Screen Magazine at the time, wrote about silent films, which were available for rent out of a place in Chicago. So we were literally, getting them from any source that we could that we felt was credible. There were fans of horror films here in Sacramento, and we said, look, you know, I have never watched Die Screaming Marianne. There was an awful lot of that stuff. And the direct-to-video had already started back then. So we needed people who were willing to watch them. So we got some experts on board who knew about horror films, who knew about silent film. We tried to be everything we could be.
Now, another thing that's changed dramatically is that there are... you know, voluminous information on the movies available in other places other than books, particularly the web. With sites like the Internet Movie Database, how has that impacted what you are doing and the future of this book? How does it supplement, you know, what you do, and how does it kind of take away from what you do?
Well, it kind of remains to be seen. I mean, at this point, I think more people are still reading than will be. I think more people find it easier to have a book on the coffee table than get up, go into the other room, and turn on the computer, sign on, and then check it. For me, it's easier to pick up a book, and I think for a lot of people, it's easier to pick up a book.
Mick Martin is co-editor of the DVD and Video Guide with Marcia Porter. This is the 20th anniversary. Mick Martin, thanks for joining us on The Business.
Oh, it's been absolutely wonderful. Thank you.
By the way, Mick Martin is also the leader of a blues band with 20 albums to their name. Here's Mick Martin and the Blues Rockers with Whiskey Train from their 2002 release, Tip of the Hat. You're listening to The Business. After a short break, Big Box brings Boffo Bucks to Tinseltown. And that's lots of alliteration from an anxious anchor.
The Business is a production of KCRW Santa Monica and is made possible in part by World Travel BTI. World Travel's high-touch travel services connect people globally through new avenues of communication, technology, and relationship building. WorldTravel.com.
This is The Business, and I'm Variety's Claude Brodesser. Walmart has been in the Hollywood news lately as they use their increasing clout to cut special deals on home entertainment. First, they managed to get an exclusive on Garth Brooks' catalog. Then they signed a contract for exclusive content with Black Entertainment Television. We thought we'd better take a closer look at how Walmart and other retail giants are affecting Hollywood. There was a time when buying a CD meant facing angry, pimply-faced teens behind the counter of a local record store. And you can still do that. But these days, most of America comes here. This is the sound of a Best Buy store in Los Angeles, and it's the sound of what much of America now considers its local record and DVD store. In fact, Walmart, Target, and other so-called big box stores accounted for half of all CDs and DVDs sold in America last year, and that number is only going to get bigger. You'd never know to look at it, but the engine that drives much of Sony Studios is located in Ben Feingold's quiet, wood-paneled office on the 8th floor of Sony Plaza. As the president of Sony's Columbia TriStar Home Video, Ben and his cohorts are responsible for roughly 60% of the worldwide revenue for every Sony film. How does he do it? A big clue is the Walmart Supplier Award of Excellence certificate that's framed prominently on his wall. But it wasn't this way a decade ago.
For Columbia Pictures at the time, and some of the other studios, we didn't have a big VHS sell-through business. It was growing, but not big. If you had live-action, adult-oriented movies, most people just rented them.
Though there was a market for kids' films, at $65 a tape, videos were priced to sell mostly to video rental stores and not to consumers. But everything started to change when DVDs came on the market in 1997.
It was hard for us to price the product at $65 to give to a rental store to re-rent when there were no machines, so they could not recoup their investment. So we had a VHS wholesale price of $65, and we had a DVD wholesale price of about $18. You say to yourself, why should we take the new product, which is better, and sell it at a lower price than the older product?
To get people buying DVD players, that's why. And their strategy worked. As the Be Kind, Rewind era began to fade, sales of DVDs began to take over rentals.
And the result has been, over 8 years, you know, most companies like our division and the other studios are triple the size that they were back, 8, 10 years ago.
Sam Walton's Variety store in Bentonville, Arkansas was becoming a behemoth. And the folks at Walmart and other big box stores realized that CDs and DVDs were a great way to get customers through their doors. Jim Urey is president of Universal Music and Video Distribution.
I'm here to tell you out there at home that some of those amazing prices that you see on music and video, they are below the cost of the stores that are doing that, which, by the way, is, of course, detrimental to that corner video or record store in your community. But if by selling the new Sheryl Crow album or the new Disney movie bring someone in that store at a loss on that particular item, by the time that person goes through the cash register, the market basket that that person has is going to be profitable to that store.
Independent record stores were overtaken by the big record stores and places like Best Buy. Mom-and-pop video rental stores were overtaken by Blockbuster. But Blockbuster, and rentals in general, were overtaken by video sales. Though rentals are still an $8 billion business, sales now account for twice as much revenue as rentals. While all the big box stores are largely responsible, Walmart made more on home video than its next three competitors combined, selling almost one out of every four videos in the U.S. The question is that a good thing or a bad thing?
The Walmart relationship is complicated because on the one hand, they're the ones that sell tonnage when you have a Shrek. They're the ones that you have to have. They're the ones that are going to put it by the front door, and they're going to do tremendous numbers. On the other hand, due to space limitations, at some point on your list they draw a line and say, we can't carry what's below this line. We want to do two things with Walmart. We want to maximize the sales of the big titles, and we want to try and get more of the smaller titles on the shelf.
Complicated or not, big box stores have made Hollywood a ton of money. DVDs and CDs are often impulse buys, and if more people are walking past the DVD and CD racks, the more DVDs and CDs are going to be sold. They've also taught the business a bit more about business.
They're very sophisticated in the way they buy product. They're interested in what their ROI is. They're interested in turns per square foot. They're interested in things that, frankly, were not even in the vocabulary of people in the home entertainment business.
For the consumer, big box stores are a mixed bag. You save money, and everything's under one roof. And according to Ben Feingold of Sony, big box stores, especially Walmart with its multitudinous rural locations, have made more movies available to more people in more places.
We actually have broader distribution of our movies than at any time in the history of the movie business. So, I mean, it's hard to believe, but yes, I mean, we can have a movie that could be based on a French movie, and it could have distribution in Sheridan, Wyoming.
Some would say the shift of power from record companies and studios to retailers with such huge clout is having a chilling effect on creativity. Walmart, which is known for its conservative politics, is at the center of this particular storm because they refuse to carry many unrated films and CDs with explicit lyrics. With such a large market share, they even have enough power to ask that cover art be changed.
Some unrated they take and some they don't. They know their consumer, and my view is it's just fine because the reality is, looking net-net, distribution at Walmart has been a huge win from a creative freedom point of view. I mean, we have products that are available in distribution in places where, under the old model, you could never find the movies. And so I don't think anybody has an entitlement to distribution. So if a retailer doesn't want to carry a particular product, I think they shouldn't have to.
The truth is that while big box stores have huge market share, there are still plenty of places to find product. Any effect on the creative freedom of Hollywood is still mild and mostly indirect. But while Walmart made $4.3 billion on video sales last year, that only accounted for about 2% of its total revenue. That is to say, there's still plenty of room for growth. And with even larger market share, it's possible the stores will be emboldened to dictate what gets made to maximize their profits. But the real danger is more subtle. With so many eggs in so few baskets, what happens if the big boxers lose the fight against digital delivery?
The overwhelming concern, if you play out Armageddon in your mind in any of these businesses, is suppose they decide they don't like the home entertainment business next week. Suppose they decide they're going to leave that business and expand their assortment of underwear seems to be the
Who knows?
And that of course is terrible because then all of a sudden you have all of the small local players that have been put out of business because they couldn't fight these behemoths. And they're gone, and then the behemoth exits the business to sell more lawn gnomes.
And that's The Business. Matt Holzman produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. You can listen to this or any past program online anytime at kcrw.com, keyword The Business. Our email address is thebusiness@kcrw.org. I'm Variety's Claude Brodesser. We'll see you next week on The Business.